Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I will try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And I have a very special guest today from Japan. Kenji Ichishima is the seventh generation of Japanese sake producer, Ichishima Sake Brewery in Niigata Prefecture, where sake is a big part of the local culture and the tradition. We'll talk about how he grew up in a traditional sake brewery, how he tries to keep the brewery fresh and strong by introducing modern ideas, and much more. But first, let me make a quick announcement. As you know, Japan was hit by another major earthquake on April 14th in the south Kumamoto Prefecture. And since then, aftershocks still continue and over 180,000 people are living in temporary facilities to avoid potential risks of landslides and building collapses. So if you are interested in supporting the victims, please visit the non-profit organization Japan Society's relief fund page. It's www.japansociety.org. Now, let's chat with Kenji. So hello, Kenji. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so Ichishima Sake Brewery was founded in 1790, almost 230 years ago.
Yes.
So could you tell us about your family history?
Okay, well, the originary Ichishima family was from the Kobe Prefecture, and I guess the ancestors moved to Niigata area along with the regional daimyo, which is the samurai period regional king, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And they settled down, and they started to open, say, wild land and filling the swamps. They acquired to own huge amount of land, and the family became one of the five biggest landowners at the time.
Right. It was like 18th century, I heard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I found a line, so that it is said that one could walk the 40 miles from the brewery to Niigata City without leaving Ichishima's property.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's at the time how much... say rice field, you know, they owned, and the mainstream family actually didn't need to work, so they could just, you know, collect the rice tax money from all those small farmers.
Mm.
So, and they made quite a fortune, and they started several businesses like, banking, shipping, pharmaceutical. At the time they didn't have electricity, so like selling candles, wood crafting, and sake making.
Mm, of course. And with that amazing rice field, you have to make good sake. Right. And I heard that your grandfather was very forward-minded, and maybe you can tell us about him.
Okay. He actually learned, studied in Germany, and that was, pre-World War II, and he learned lots of things from the outside of Japan, and one of the things was, of course, how Japan was a little bit kind of behind, well, technology-wise and everything and at the time, and also the, well, like equal rights between men and women also. And he after he came back from Germany, he started to hire female sake making or sake work sake brewers.
Wow.
In Japan.
It's almost like no sushi chef. Female sushi chef is just
right.
equivalent.
At the time, well, even nowadays, most of the sake breweries don't really hire actual sake brewers or making people. And well, in those back in those days, women are like banned, you know, to get into actual the brewery facility. So that was you know how strict that the days were and. I suppose my grandfather was the first one to start using the female workers.
Because there's no reason why not.
Exactly, yeah. If you think now, you know, there's no reason. And even nowadays, we still have three female workers, and they are very precise, and they maintain things very well, and you know, clean the facility very well.
Wow.
And you know, work as hard as, you know, people, I mean the guys.
Right, that's great. So Ichishima is a great model for equal rights for women.
I hope so, yeah.
Right, okay. So the, and also your grandfather, he worked at the brewery in Germany or no, something else?
I don't think so, yeah. Well, I don't really know, you know, what he was doing over there, but, you know, I heard he studied well, he was fascinated by the well, the all those high or royal people's symbols and you know those crest and things,
right.
And then he came back. He made a brand, sub brand or secondary brand called Omond, which literally means king symbol, and which brand we still use back in my home country or back in Niigata, Japan.
Wow! So it's like a modern stream of things happening at Ichishima since then.
At the time, it was quite modern to use European, you know, taste emblems and the characters. Yeah.
Wow, amazing. So, and Niigata Prefecture, which is the northwestern part of Japan, is very well known for production excellent sake. And I heard that there are most over all the almost 100 sake breweries in the region right now.
At the moment, we have, I believe, 90 sake breweries existing. And, excuse me, say, well, yeah, they all make sake, and I would say 60-something breweries would export to U.S. Out of 90, yes.
Amazing. Right. So why is Niigata so suitable for making great sake?
Well, the first thing I have to say is, you know, we make the finest rice, you know, in Japan. And also we have, let's see, the very good soft water.
That's interesting. So soft water, it means less minerals. And how does that affect the taste?
Well, for making sake, usually the longer fermentation, the better quality sake comes out. And in order for us to have a longer fermentation or slower fermentation, I might add, we use the soft, well, the soft water is very, very suitable for the longer, slower fermentation instead of the rapid fermentation with the high calcium or sodium.
Because probably minerals could affect, penetrate into rice, so it's kind of milder, softer.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, and also it's really snowy, isn't it?
It is, yes. And usually the sake making happens during the winter, and well, the snow, the effect of the snow is significant also. And well, usually the snow is you know, teeny tiny small snow flakes, but that usually contains the center core of a some kind of dust or some you know, some sort, you know, in the air. So from, I don't know, by growing up in the snow country, you know, when you walk up and get outside of the house, in the morning of the heavy snow during the night, you can just feel the air is so clean and you're purified by the snow. And also for the good part of the snow or having snow is to have the very salt water from the rivers. Snow melting water, you know, runs through the water, runs through the rivers, and that's usually the water I use for making sake. And unlike underground water, you know, through the ground for, I don't know, sometimes it could be like how many years, like 10 years, you know, 20 years, hundreds of years, but that could be very hard water. But running water, river running water is fairly soft, so... That's again, you know, very good too.
Right, and also like you said, the air is clean because of, like, there's like snow works as a filter, kind of. So the air, it's important in old breweries because it's like a whole Koji mold and everything affects the process. Okay, and so there's a term to describe the style of sake from Niigata called Niigata Tande. So what is this?
Okay, well, originally, we didn't have the word tanre in the dictionary before, but there's this person came up with this term or word tanre, and it is about the sake, sake describing adjective, and I would say the sake which is very clean, crisp, and very, clear. Taste almost like water, and so you know, if I add Niigata people drink a lot of sake per capita wise. Well, Japan has 47 prefectures, which is like almost like states, but among those, Niigata people drink the most amount of sake per capita.
Right.
So they tend to go for this clean, crisp sake instead of. Sometimes, you know, Tokyo or the here in U.S., people sometimes go for high aroma, fruity, and sometimes sweet sake. But instead, Niigata people usually go for very dry, clean sake, which is like, you know, what we call tanre.
Which comes first, because the sake is lighter, you drink more, it's like lighter sake, so that you can drink more. I don't know.
Yeah, well.
Right. But I heard, in Japan, water tend to be softer, but in Niigata, I heard it's 2 to 5 degrees, and in Kyoto, that could be 8. So, like you said, there's a huge diversity, and Niigata is very light and clean.
Elegant. I would think so, yeah. And again, even in Japan, you know, we pair with sake with food. So, you know, when you're pairing, and sake could be, well, sometimes it could be like a main, you know, thing, you know, on the table. But usually it's like to enhance the food. And in order for the sake to do that, you know, it shouldn't really like to be muscular and bold, but instead, you know, like very good. Well, again, tanre could help, you know, us taste the food much more, you know, like, well, especially if you're having like sensitive food or like white meat, fish, or say sashimi, you know, all those kind of things.
Right. So rather than competing with food, it's supporting.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And I also heard that the Niigata even developed a special rice called the koshitanre. To express the tanre style sake, do you feel this? So what is koshitanre?
Koshitanre has been out there for, I would say, to the market about 10 years or 9 years. And before that time, before the koshitanre brand rice, we didn't have very good rice for making high-end daiginjo, juma daiginjo class sake. So we had to buy the rice, this particular rice called Yamada Nishiki, from different region of Japan. But you know, if you think about, like, we make sake, everything out of Niigata, but daiginjo or the juma daiginjo, high-end
that means that you have to mill down the rice grain
right.
a lot more. Uh-huh. So you need a specific type of rice.
Type of rice, yes. Mm. And this specific type of rice, the Yamada Nishiki, doesn't grow in Niigata area because of the weather.
Ah, okay.
So instead, we came up with a mixed breed of this Yamada Nishiki rice and the other very famous rice called the Gohyaku Mangoku, and we developed this special new rice called
Koshinara. So like Koshinara. 50% hybrid mm-hmm, of new.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And, you know, the rice has very good character of the clean, crisp style Gohyaku Mangoku rice, plus the body and sometimes, you know, the fruity kind of aroma component of the Yamada Nishiki. So it is, you know, it has the both of the good, you know, components.
Mm. And I heard you have to register with the government to grow Koshinara because it's such a special rice.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, in the beginning it was, lab tested and we were selecting the good buds, but then yeah, they came up with, you know, certain kind, and after everything, the governor named the rice, you know, to Koshinara.
Right. Yeah. It's beautiful. Right. And is it expensive? I mean, relatively
well, compared to Yamada Nishiki, the famous, you know, popular kind, to other areas, Deginjo, slightly cheaper, actually.
Oh, wow.
So it is actually easy for us, for us brewers in Niigata.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the best way to enjoy Niigata Tanrei style sake? Like any kind of food? Like you said, a lighter kind of food?
Yes, but, you know, still, we have 90 sake breweries, and each brewery has, you know, its own taste, and we have different kinds of sake. So it is actually very hard for us to describe all the Niigata sake is Tanrei, but some of them could be very bold, fruity, you know, masculine type daiginjo, or sometimes, you know, it could be a little bit aged, smoky type sake too. So, yeah, it's hard, but example wise, the Tanrei sake, if it's clean and crisp, yeah, I would usually go with the, like I said, light, very sensitive light white meat fish, and sometimes I would go with oysters as well.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's for sake itself. I usually go for the Honjozo class sake, but I mean the sake itself. I would go for Junmai style sake, but with the food, I usually go with the Honjo.
Okay,
sake.
So you mean like Honjozo Junmai means it's more rice flavor because it's not milled down too much to the center. Okay, I'm getting hungry now. So now let's talk about you. So how was it like to grow up in a traditional sake brewery?
it's a difficult question. If you think about, if you think about your heritage or, you know, the family you grew up with, that's the family you know and you grew up with, and that's the world you know only.
Right.
So I didn't think it was any special or anything, but once I got to the point that, you know, I should take over the brewery, and I have this, you know, long history of the family business, and it is very traditional one.
Right.
I got the point that I should do, and I wanted to do. But otherwise, I didn't feel it was that difficult, or, you know, I wasn't pressured or anything.
Okay, right. And then I recently saw the amazing movie, The Birth of Sake, which features a traditional sake brewery like yours. It's called Tedorigawa. And I saw the brewers spend 3 months away from their family to make sake every year. So was your brewery like that?
For my brewery, it's not like that anymore. All of my brewers are from my company or the brewery area, so they could commute from their own houses. And but still, you know, even in Niigata area, we have that kind of those kind of sake breweries existing, and some of them have the older brewers, you know, only came to work for the brewery during the winter. Mm-hmm. And usually all those workers or brewers are farmers during the summertime, and they make rice or mm-hmm. Some other stuff, and they are the farmers. And then during the winter with the heavy snow, they don't have things to do, or they could do something different other than the farming. So they became those farmers. Well, throughout the history, somehow they find a way to work during the winter as a brewer.
Interesting, because I think for a business point of view, I know American sake brewers brew throughout the year, mm-hmm. but in Japan, in tradition, because it's the best way to make the best sake, they still follow the seasons.
Yeah, and of course, if there were huge demand of the sake from a brewery, the brewery might need to brew, throughout the year. Say nowadays, there's this brand called Dasai. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's huge back in Japan or here in US as well. And I think they're brewing, almost 12 months, And but still, like I said, winter is a significantly good environment. For
especially in Niigata, the snow and the temperature and everything. Right. Okay. So so did you know that you're going to succeed your family business? Because you studied in the U.S.
USA, yeah. I lived here in U.S. for 4 years, and at the time I wasn't really thinking about, going back and taking over or anything. And I was just having, I guess, okay time here.
Freedom.
And I was a student and I was young. So, but anyway, then, by living here, I started to look back and my family history or heritage, and I started to feel more like, I should go back and take over. Mm-hmm. And also, my father passed away when I was 17. Uh-huh. And so after that, my mother took over the brewery, and she was running the brewery at the time. So, they were expecting me to come back. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you succeeded the brewery in 2002. Mm-hmm. So since you became the president, have you made any changes?
I did change. At the time, brewmaster now, but the previous brewmaster was still there, and he was somewhat more old-fashioned than the brewmaster now. And I started to tell him that maybe we should start brewing this way, that way, mm-hmm. With the information I gathered, from the friendly brewers in Niigata. And
you mean lighter style?
Yes, lighter side, and Tanre style sake.
Right.
And I used to work for this sake brewery for 2 years as a sake brewer. Well, just a sake brewer, and that's the biggest sake brewery in Niigata. And they are making fantastic sake, and also it's a little bit, of course, more advanced, compared to my sake brewery. So that's why, I wanted to make slight changes. Yeah.
Mm, okay. And so you're the one who decided to go abroad as well.
Well, yeah. At the time, in the beginning, after I took over, there was a very small amount of the sale to, say, Germany, and I think one other, but it's almost nothing compared to now. And I don't know, I didn't actually think about doing exporting so much, but then somehow I became the chairman of the Sake Brewers Association Junior Council, which is like young brewers association, national association. And then I started to get to meet people, or people who are very heavily involved to the sake industry or sake world, not just in Japan, but you know, here in US or in European countries and all over the world. And then after meeting them, you know, because I could speak English, I guess, we became friends, and they came to my brewery and they liked my sake and they started to import my sake. So that's how almost, you know, started.
Wow, yeah. Fantastic. Okay, so I think we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about how Kenji managed to convince American people to drink his sake. So please stay with us.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit wholefoodsmarket.com to find a store closest to you. The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, in Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes, which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He would be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? Not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more Mile a Minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live promo studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Kenji Ichishima, the seventh generation sake producer from Niigata Prefecture, which has a distinctive sake making tradition. His Ichishima Sake Brewery is globally recognized for high quality. So when you decide to go abroad, did you bring the same sake to the US, or you customize sake for a new market?
In the beginning, we didn't really change anything. But at the time, we had this kind of new generation, low in alcohol and somewhat acidic sake in the house or at the brewery. And we already started to sell in Japan. And we have this sake tourist, like we have, let's say, 30, 40,000 visitors every year to my sake brewery.
Oh,
and sometimes, you know, we have people from, you know, other countries, and they tend to like this particular sake. So in the beginning, I started to push this sake along with the traditional style, say Jumeda Ginjo or you know, those fruity sake, and then this light sake started to dominate the other kinds of sake. So
wow, so it sounds like, I think the worldwide the wine market too also tend to be cleaner, lighter. Wine is preferred.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. And even in Japan, you know, German light wine kind is very popular too. So I think it's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
Right. And I also heard that you created a really nice label for the
market. After a certain period of, say, I think, you know, doing... let's say exporting to the U.S. after 3 years of the experience, we started to think, we had been told that, you know, well, Japanese labels are very traditional and very nice with the, you know, Japanese characters and kanji characters, and that's fine. But usually, you know, people here in the U.S. would order a sake, but next time, you know, they cannot remember.
Right. And you don't know how to pronounce the meaning of it.
Yeah, and, you know, so every single time we ask somebody, you know, so what did you have last night? And say they'll say, well, it's in a blue bottle or something, you know. They always remember the color of the bottle, but, you know, no brand whatsoever, or, you know, almost no categories.
Right.
So then, yeah, I for me to see, say, like Korean characters, you know, of course, I only see them as designs. It's same thing. Mm. So we decided to go with certain symbol for people to remember my brewery. And then we changed the label to this, you know, symbol center and the brand on the side kind of label. And it's somewhat contemporary, modern. So, yeah, it is actually well taken here and also other countries as well.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So is there any name of the series?
Yeah, well, actually, the brand is Ichishima.
Okay.
And the series is actually the Dew series. And it's like dewdrop, you know. And the design is, well, my Japanese designer who lives in Manhattan, she started with the sort of like traditional flow of water, or the, say, traditional painting of the cloud. And then she flipped that to vertical, and also that looks like the legs of the sake on the glass.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's why we named that it's a Dew series.
Mm, yeah. Right. So where can we get your Dew series?
Well, nowadays we, well, say in Manhattan area, we are selling a lot of retail shops. And, well, to tell you the truth, we went through the importer change last year, and well, we lost the existing customers, a lot of existing customers last year. So now we are building that up again. So not so many with the say the restaurants, but well, today, you know, we pitched the sake to, well, new, you know, huge hip restaurant called Zuma as well, and well, traditional, very traditional Japanese restaurant called Tsukushi carries my sake as well.
Mm.
By the way, Tsukushi is closing in
sometime soon.
Soon, yeah, right. Yeah. But anyway, here and there, but yeah, nowadays mostly retail. So yeah, I hope to see my sake more in restaurants. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, because I was going to ask you also to, you know, what's the biggest challenge to, you know, in selling your sake in new market? It sounds like distributors, importers, these are really hard to find.
Yes. You know, to sell anything, it is easy to bring the product to the market. That's fine and that's easy. But, you know, from that warehouse to the actual customer, to the consumer is, you know, like that's same thing, you know, for Japanese market or here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that you know, that has to do with, you know, like human energy and power, and
you have to convince someone
to
fall in love with you.
Yeah, and you have to meet people, and you have to make connections and relationships, I guess.
Right. Yeah. But to make your efforts easier, now your sake has been wonderfully recognized in the global market. And for instance, IWC, the International Wine Challenge in London, which is regarded as the biggest annual wine competition in the world, has awarded numerous prizes to your sake. And in 2015, you won 2 silver medals and 4 bronze medals at the IWC. So how do you make your sake so tasty?
Well, I have to thank my brewmaster, actually. Well, of course, you know, we talk about the recipe and which kind of, you know, where we should go. That those kind of things we discuss. But yeah, he's very good at it, and he's from, you know, well, the local hometown, and he's been working for my brewery since he was 18.
Mm.
Yeah, and. Now he's one of the, I guess, you know, younger generation brewmaster who also teaches, you know, to younger brewers in Niigata as well.
Mm.
And he is very good, and also, well, I guess in a way, to make good sake, you have to be truthfully, like, you know, sincere to actually making sake. So you cannot skip anything. So, you know, you have to be precise. You have to be very clean and yeah, honest, I suppose.
Maybe yeah. Patient.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, and very hardworking.
Mm. Yeah. Right, because you are dealing with the nature, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Okay, so how do you describe the style of Ichishima sake?
Well, this is my last day here in the U.S. for this trip, and
you've been here like two weeks,
yes.
Wow.
And I hear lots of comments toward my sake, and one of them is, well, and which I like is feminine, very mellow, feminine, and clean, crisp as well, but. Yeah, even back in Japan, you know, women tend to like my sake, and it's not like a very dry, style for mankind, but very easy on your palate and a soft texture, and yeah, very sensitive sake. So, I hope. You know,
that's interesting, because your mother one time ran the brewery, mm-hmm. and their brew master or brewers are female.
Yeah,
right. So maybe that's the reflection.
Yeah, that could be the one of the reason too. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, and maybe you can give us some examples with sake.
The Daiginjo sake. Daiginjo even. Nowadays, most of the Junmai Daiginjo or Daiginjos are very, very bold and very fruity because of the recent development of the certain yeast.
Mm-hmm.
But
in general.
In general. So, it is very easy to recognize, you know, if you have the sip of the sake, those bold ones. But then, you know, after a while... the aroma is good, but you know, still, like I said, if you're pairing it with food, it could get you, you know,
right.
And you might get bored with the, or it could get too much. And I think our sake is much, much more balanced. And like I said, it's so mellow. So, balance wise, I that's why we're making this style sake, but of course, balance wise, you know, I like my sake, you know, much, much more compared to the bold. And fruity is kind of sweet kind.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the ginjo.
That's the daiginjo.
Daiginjo. It's milled down at least at 50%.
Yeah. And right. This particular daiginjo, say 35%, milled down to 35% is called competition daiginjo we have.
Mm.
And that's the flagship sake of my brewery, and
meaning it's only 35% of rice is remaining.
Yeah, wow. The center core we use, and we don't throw away the powder, outside powder, but that's going to be converted to, I guess, rice crackers or something in Niigata.
Right, no waste.
That's very not very, you know, very mellow, but very. Elegant sake.
Right, because that you know the rice koshitanre, you use koshitanre for that 35% remaining.
Yeah.
Wow. I want to taste that.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. And then you have some other sparkling or some lighter sake for
this
market.
Yes. We have this sake called Silk Deluxe. The sake quality category is Junmai, but. Unlike ordinary Junmai, this sake has 10% alcohol and very, very, good amount of sugar residue.
Mm-hmm.
But this sugar is unlike the ordinary simple sugar, but it's called multi-molecule oligosaccharide.
Mm-hmm.
So although the density is the same as the sugar, but on your palate, the sweetness is very light and silky, hence... The sake name is Silk Deluxe, and actually the close to half of the sake we bring here to US is this particular sake, the very light alcohol. yeah, sweet sake.
Right. So out of your products, what kind of sake is most selling in this market here in the U.S.?
Yeah, that I'm
that's
sorry.
What types of sake out of your products is most selling here in this market?
Well, that's the silk.
Okay.
Yeah. And after the silk is Tokubetsu Honjozo. Mm-hmm. That's the typical Niigata style tanre sake, mm-hmm. and a dry, clean, crisp style sake. Mm-hmm. And that's very easy to pair with most of the food, like I said. So I guess, you know, price point wise, it's easier, you know, for your for your pocket or wallet. So
you could take steps to graduate into the next level.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay, great. So. By the way, so first time we met at it was at the major sake festival in Niigata several years ago, and it's called the Sake no Jin.
Uh-huh.
And you've been playing an important role to run it successfully for years. So what is Sake no Jin?
Okay, Sake no Jin is the so-called sake festival, organized by Niigata Sake Brewers Association. Mm-hmm. And this is held in March, middle of March, for one weekend, Saturday, Sunday. And this year, 2016, we gathered over 120,000 people for 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah, for one. We do this, you know, at one convention center in Niigata. But it was packed.
And all the 90 breweries gather.
Yes, well, not everybody, because, you know, small ones don't really or cannot really give away the samples, you know, so much, because they are so small. But close to 90 sake brewers attend, and you pay almost like, well, conversion wise, $18. And all the sake you can drink, you know, in the venue.
Because per brewery, they have like 3-4 different kinds of sake.
Yeah, so total sake you could see or taste if you try, ending up 500, 600.
Right. So I saw ambulance parked outside the convention.
I know. Yeah, well, it's been great, you know, without ambulance, you know, past several years. But yeah, this year we had to, yeah.
Well, that means you have a very good sake over there. Right. And so out of that 120,000 people, are they from nearby or from everywhere?
40% from outside of Niigata, and 60% from within Niigata, or, you know, within the city.
Mm. So including people from outside Japan?
Yeah. Sometimes we get people from Hong Kong. Sometimes from U.S. as well.
Mm.
Yep. And this is one of the biggest sake festival in Japan. So they started to see that, and some, you know, sake geeks or sake teachers, they organize sake tours, you know, to the festival.
Sounds like if you're serious about sake, that's kind of a must to visit. Right. And then other than Sake no Jin, if we decide to go to Niigata, what can we see? What can we enjoy? What can we eat?
The Niigata local cuisine, Niigata is right on the Japan sea coast. So naturally, the seafood is a must. And like I said, white meat fish is good. And, of course, nowadays, you know, people eat tuna and all those red meat fish, but you know, originally it's not from the area, so we usually go for light meat, those white fish plus like squid or and there's one called nodoguro.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like I think it's rosy sea bass.
Yeah.
And it's just a fatty throughout the year.
Mm.
And
it is very popular. Yeah.
So tasty. Mm. Perfect pairing with the sake. Right. Okay, so listeners, I think you should think of visiting Niigata, and especially for Sake no Jin in mid-March.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Right? Yeah. So 2017, it's the same in mid-March.
I think so. I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So where can they get the information?
You could go www.sakenojin.com. JP, I believe.
Okay.
Sake no Jin is Sake no Jin. J-I-N, sakenojin.jp. Mm. Yeah, we have the info, and also we have that same Sakenojin Facebook page. So,
Okay.
And I make sure to have the English version as well.
Great. So listeners, check that out. So, sakenojin.jp or Facebook. Okay. So, like you have worked on Sakenojin, you are one of the leaders of the sake industry. So, what is the biggest challenge in running a traditional sake brewery for you?
Say nowadays, you know, of course sake is still, you know, consumed and well taken by the, you know, people. I think it's, you know, same for the modern developed countries, but people do not drink as much as before. Mm-hmm. You know, like the age of, like, our father's age, or, you know, our
right. It's worldwide.
Yeah, I believe so. And so, you know, in order to keep the, I guess, production or volume-wise, it's a little bit tough. Mm. Yeah. And in Japan, we are selling more high-end sake from Ginjo, Juma Ginjo, or higher. The sale-wise, it's, you know, a little bit up. Or, you know, more than the last years, you know.
So people appreciate more quality sake, even
yes,
if they have
uh-huh,
to pay a little
uh-huh.
more.
And but everyday sake, say, like, you know, table sake, those are a little bit, you know, declining. Mm. The lines declining,
because there's so many other cheaper wine or
mm-hmm,
beer.
Mm-hmm. They could have, you know, so many options nowadays.
Right.
Yeah. So that part, you know, we still make and we still sell. So. Those table sake as well, so that's a little bit of a challenge. And also, if you look at the world, you know, it's changing very, very rapidly. So, but sake brewing is very long process and very traditional. And but somehow we have to adjust, you know, to the changing consumers.
Mm.
And but sake cannot change, you know, like, you know, overnight. So yeah, it's somewhat, you know, good challenge. But you know, it's a fun challenge. Yeah.
Right. So what's the best part of being a sake producer?
I don't know. Well, I guess for me, I get to meet people. Yeah. And of course, you know, free sake. Well, I guess nowadays you have to buy, you know, from your own company, but you know,
a guaranteed high quality too.
Yeah, and you know, and well, I didn't think like this before, but you know, well, if I go out and, you know, if I say, okay, well, I'm a sake brewery owner, you know, I guess that sounds cool. So yeah, I enjoy and I take it.
Right,
yeah.
And they listen to you, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And you can travel abroad.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good fun. Yeah, I usually travel 60-70 days, you know, per year.
Oh, and, wow.
Well, some brewers, you know, travel more, like over 100 days or so.
Mm.
So but yeah, that's for me, that's, you know, very good. And yeah, I enjoy the, you know, the scenery and the local food sometimes, and you know, meeting people.
Right.
So
okay, so on your next trip, please come back.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you for joining us today, Kenji.
Thank you very much.
So listeners, if you're interested in Kenji's work and sake, everything, please visit itishima.jp, that is ICHSHIMAJP, that's itishima.jp. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org. And today's show was, today's engineer was Jack Inslee. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcast. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.